Hey, did you ever just kind of make plans slightly on the fly and it just completely goes to shit? I mean, I'm the polar opposite of on the fly. I mean, I love to plan. But last weekend, Bucky and I decided to drive around a bit, and this was my idea, so I am to blame. I usually pick a few things to do, and all three of them were like large failures. There were a couple wild cards last weekend that I kind of didn't think about. It was President's Day, February 16th. Which is also the birthday of Mr. Reading Rainbow, LeVar Burton, and also Ice-T. I mean, dude, Ice-T, what a character. I kind of love him. He's kind of a terrible actor, but like in a good way. Like he's very endearing. And check out some of Ice-T's debut album from 1987. I had it on cassette called Rhyme Pays on Sire Records. Sire Records, remember that shit? The album has some cool songs on it. I always love the song Rhyme Pays, which has an intro that samples Mike Oldfield's Tubular Bells, which was used so effectively for the soundtrack of the 1973 film The Exorcist. And Rhyme Pays also samples Black Sabbath's classic song War Pigs. Okay, so long story long, it was President's Day, and last Saturday was goddamn Valentine's Day. So first, we drove way the fuck out to the Forest Lawn Cemetery in Glendale, and this cemetery is like roughly the size of Texas. I mean, we were like mildly baked, but even so, the place is massive and so spread out. So we did check out Elizabeth Taylor's crypt, which has like a huge white marble angel sculpture. So that was cool. And more significantly for me, at least, I was able to visit Kim Shattuck's grave. Yes, the lead singer of the Muffs. She died in 2019 of ALS. And ALS recently claimed the life of Grey's Anatomy Eric Dane. But dear Kim Shattuck, I mean, what an authentically goofy person. I was so into her and her music. So yeah, I was also kind of hot. So we pulled the plug on the cemetery at that point. So then I was like, oh, let's check out the house that was featured in the Michael Jackson music video Thriller. It's over in Echo Park. And the classic horror-inspired Thriller video was released in 1983 and was directed by the sleazeball dickhead John Landis. Well, anyway, we first got lost going to the house. And then there was like this epic traffic at the exit we needed to get off on. So we were just like, okay, fuck that. Then I said, hey, let's get some lunch. Let's go to the smokehouse in Burbank, which was like also kind of a trek. So as we were approaching the restaurant, mind you, it's like 2 p.m., but it looked busy outside. And we both were like, oh, shit, it's Valentine's Day. We called the restaurant and they were booked all day. So at that point, I really just wanted to scream. We debated finding another place to eat, but we were just so spent. So we had spent like about 30 minutes or so at the cemetery, but the bulk of our excursion was just like driving around probably for like 2.5 hours. Like I said, I'm a good planner. I'm a pro, but I just wasn't paying attention last weekend. So there you go. And while on the subject of cemeteries, I saw this familiar quote recently from the powerhouse American journalist, satirist, and cultural critic H.L. Mencken. Mencken said, "A cynic is a man who, when he smells flowers, looks around for a coffin." Henry Louis Mencken, you clever bastard. All right, quiet on the set and action.
You are my density. You are my density.
All right, Buffalo. Who is listening in Buffalo? Is that you, Vincent Gallo? I do like Gallo in the sweet little movie Palookaville, but Gallo overall is kind of a phony. I fell for his shit for a while, and then I was just like, this guy kind of sucks. So anyway, whoever it is, thanks for listening, Buffalo. Okay, some recent passings. So I wasn't a big Dawson's Creek guy, not my thing, but James Vanderbeek is just one of those guys that seemed to me like he was a pretty cool guy. And I didn't know him, but I liked how he poked fun at his celebrity in the pretty funny at times TV show Don't Trust the Bee in Apartment 23, which got canceled partway into its second season. Kristen Ritter, no relation to John, played the bee in Apartment 23, and James Vanderbeek played himself, which was funny and it just worked. James Vanderbeek was also in 1999's Varsity Blues, directed by Brian Robbins, who previously acted as one of those goofball students on the TV show Head of the Class. I couldn't really give a shit about Varsity Blues, but the movie did have Amy Smart. Oh my God, Amy Smart, mentioned several times before. God, I was in love with her. I edited something with her once, and I would just melt when I looked at her eyes. She ended up like marrying this dildo, Carter Oosterhaus. He's one of those weird twins from the Trading Spaces TV show. And I guess she defended her husband from previous like sexual misconduct allegations. I don't know much about it, but he seems like a douche. And anyway, Amy, I thought we had telepathically agreed to us getting married one day. Speaking of telepathically, there was a patient at the county psych hospital I worked at. This lady was very nice, but she was very psychotic. She was in the hospital for months and months waiting for placement. But anyway, like every few days, she would calmly walk up to the nurse's station and accuse someone of something. But there was a catch. It was always telepathically. So one time she came up and said to like the charge nurse, "Hey, Mark came into my room and was hovering and threatened me." Telepathically. It's like most complaints that end with telepathically don't really go anywhere. That's just kind of a rule. Can you picture a courtroom scene? "Okay, Mark, what are you accusing the defendant of doing?" "Well, sir, he stole all of the money out of my bank account." Telepathically. The judge would be like, "What? Telepathically? Dude, get the fuck out of my courtroom." Okay, and a wise man died recently. The filmmaker Frederick Wiseman. Forgive me, Frederick, for making that joke. Frederick Wiseman, the master of documentaries. This guy has directed some of the best documentaries that I have never seen. I mean, of course, I've seen 1967's Titty Cut Follies about life in a sanitarium and 1968's High School and the unmissable 1970 Hospital, where some partier is shown puking with such fervor at a hospital. The earlier films were shorter, you know, kind of like that line with Woody Allen. I love his earlier, funnier movies. But yeah, Wiseman started doing like 2-hour documentaries and then 3-hour documentaries in his 1989 documentary Near Death, which focuses on terminally ill patients, is just under 6 hours. Jesus, I'm going to need some IV hydration afterwards if I watch that fucking thing. And I don't mind a long-ass movie here and there, but I have my limits. But Frederick Wiseman was dedicated to showing the reality of life, the victories, the funny moments, the tragedies. I mean, there's a nobility to the people in a lot of Wiseman's documentaries. His movies almost seem like novelistic at times. He's like the Studs Terkel of documentary filmmaking. Wiseman stayed busy and stayed devoted to his work. And I say thank you, Mr. Wiseman. You will be missed. Okay, and this is big time. Robert Duvall recently died. I mean, he was old as hell. I mean, hell, Duvall was a force, a bit cantankerous, and he gave some directors hell. And he also always kind of had a slow simmer in his performances. He could explode at times, but often it was just below the surface. And of course, he famously played the consigliere to the Corleone family in The Godfather and The Godfather Part 2. Duvall skipped out on Part 3 because he thought it was unfair that they were going to pay Al Pacino a lot more money than him. And Duvall passing on The Godfather 3 was a wise move. That movie sucks. Yes, it sucks. It's not worthy of further consideration or reexamination. It sucks. Sofia Coppola was remarkably bad in it. And that's on her dad. I don't blame Sofia, though I am in no way a fan of hers. Anyway, a couple of quick, fun Godfather tidbits. There's pictures out there of Robert Duvall like wearing cue cards on his shirt so that Marlon Brando is able to read his lines. Brando kind of got fucking weird at times, gaining a bunch of weight, not learning his lines. I mean, Brando was an artist, no doubt, but you don't have to be a pain in the ass, too. And the other funny story is like the scene in The Godfather where Marlon Brando has the cat. I guess that was just some stray cat that was hanging around and it wouldn't leave. And finally, Coppola was just like, fuck it, just use the cat in the scene. And Robert Duvall was also memorably in Apocalypse Now. No need to say the napalm quote. That's been done to death. I remember the rain people as being kind of interesting and also something that I never wanted to see again. So yeah, the Duvall conundrum. Great actor for sure, but you know, aside from like a few of his movies, I didn't really like Robert Duvall movies as a whole. I mean, yes, Godfather 1 and 2, and you know, I'm obsessed with 1973's The Outfit with Joe Don Baker and Robert Duvall and Karen Black. It's a lean revenge action movie. But overall, while I'm a fan of the man, I didn't really enjoy watching his movies. I mean, my apologies. What do you want me to do, lie or something? Speaking of not liking someone, welcome to this week's edition of the Contrarian's Corner. Okay, here we go. Daniel Day-Lewis is so overrated. The guy takes himself so seriously, and he gets so method. He's trying so hard to be real and not seem like he's acting that I find like he actually seems like he's acting to me. I just never have bought his shtick. I'm sorry. And anyone who remains in character while not filming is a fucking loser. It's called acting, dude. If you're playing Abraham Lincoln, you don't need to dress like him and not shower and fucking piss in an outhouse. I mean, the last time I think I liked Daniel Day-Lewis in something was My Beautiful Laundrette, a romance from 1985 directed by Stephen Frears. And while we're still in the contrarian's corner, There Will Be Blood sucks. It's overlong, it's pretentious, it's got Paul Dano in it. And yes, I know Tarantino dissed Paul Dano recently. And while Paul Dano seems like a nice guy, he's just one of those guys I don't like to look at. He kind of gives me like a mild nausea, much like this Barry Keoghan character who looks like something that came out of W.C. Field's ass. But yeah, this I drink your milkshake stuff, it's bullshit. And if someone really loves There Will Be Blood, or if they love any of those Yorgos Lanthimos movies, then they will be penciled in on my list of lame asses. I gotta be honest, I haven't watched a lot of stuff these last couple weeks. Oh shit, before I forget, an update on Peter Green. I guess he accidentally shot himself, like at the armpit area, and he bled out. I guess he was fucking around in some way with a loaded gun. And man, you don't mess with that crap. So yeah, it's kind of a bizarre way to go out, but that's Peter Green for you. Okay, kind of a good band name. It's medically inspired. Are you ready? The Macular Degenerates. It's kind of literary sounding, isn't it? I started watching some crapola noir cop thriller called Blood Run. It's from 1995. It stars the bad actor David Bradley as a cop who gets involved with a possible murderer. Blood Run is directed by the cheesy exploitation director Boaz Davidson. I've only watched a little bit of it, to be honest, and I'll report if it becomes watchable. But there's a scene near the beginning where a cop is telling someone where a suspect lives. And the cop is like, yeah, he lives on 533 Blueberry Street. He's like, what? Blueberry Street? That's the best you could come up with? And in closing, every once in a while there's just a photo taken that is just so of the moment and just an absolutely perfect shot. And that would be the ex-Prince Andrew in the backseat of a car after being held in a police station overnight. The look on Andrew's face is just priceless. It's a mixture of absolute shock with some sense of like existential terror in there. It's just one of those photos that you see and you're immediately like, okay, that's an instant classic. Anyway, let's end with a quote about power in this age of powerful men behaving badly, as they generally always have. But anyway, Robert Ingersoll, an American lawyer and writer, said, "Nearly all men can stand adversity, but if you want to test a man's character, give him power."